afternoon. Today is Tuesday, November the 4th. 304th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, casually. Boy, you look like you came off the golf course.
I didn't.
Yeah, I know.
But I am wearing comfortable clothing today. I didn't have any client appointments. And
good. So, and you didn't sleep at a certain branded hotel either?
No, I did not.
Okay. This is all just native knowledge.
I slept at home. Just to be clear.
Yeah.
In case there's any doubts out there. Home.
Mr. McCauley is alongside. We're not going to talk politics today. Yay.
Really?
That's for 5 hours from now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be kind of fun.
Yeah. So have you voted?
I did.
Yeah, good.
Well, no, I did, sort of. I didn't vote on any of the judges.
I didn't either.
Associate what, judge?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, I was either just going to vote against all of them on general principle.
It would have taken too long for me.
Yeah.
Sit there and have to color it.
Or I decided I wasn't going to vote on those. So you and I apparently think, at least with regard to casting
watch,
our ballots
on
the judiciary.
Watch it.
I mean, I'm not sure what happens. What would happen if the no's exceeded the yeses?
Oh, why? I'm sure there would be appointments then.
Yeah, and who do you suppose would get appointed?
Yeah, everybody with last name Brown.
Well, I'm just making the point that probably the same people get it anyway. So
that's true.
So, I don't know, but there's probably an intellectually solid reason to cast a ballot on those that I haven't discerned yet. So
tonight's going to be a whole lot more exciting than what we've just been experiencing.
No.
I guarantee it.
No, it won't.
We got Arkley in. We've got
it will be a lot more
Bone
exciting
in.
With those guys.
Supposed to have Chief Mills and Chief Woods also, so there'll be a little bit of excitement.
Yeah.
Yeah, you troll with a little bit of food. It's amazing.
Exactly.
Who comes in.
I knew there had to be food. I knew there had to be food. That's how you know.
And on the flip side, there's no food here. That kind of explains what we deal with during the afternoon as well.
And why I'm here now.
Yes. And you got a pile of paper, and we're going to figure out. We'll start at the top and go down through it when we come back.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
St. Bernard's has openings for new children in our preschool and pre-kindergarten classes. Hi, I'm David Sharp, president of St. Bernard's Catholic School. St. Bernard's Early Childhood Education Center, license number 12540-2277, offers preschool and pre-kindergarten. We're open year-round from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call us at 443-7705 to schedule a visit.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:14. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from Marjorie Allingham, 1962. Quote, "People don't alter. They may, with enormous difficulty, modify themselves, but they never really change." How's that for a frightening quote on an election day, huh?
Well, I kind of think it's true.
Yeah.
I think it's true. People tend not to change. And they certainly, I think people don't change because a third party wants them to change. They tend to, I think when we change, we tend to
You've
change.
You've been to counseling too?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay.
but I am,
External forces.
I am. Yeah. I do see a lot of people during the first few months of the year, and we talk about lots of stuff with some people.
So you're the therapist.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. I mean, it's sometimes people just need to. They're sitting with you. They're talking about their finances. They'll tell you about other stuff.
Yeah.
So that's good. I mean, it's.
Boy.
I just don't really want to say the wrong thing.
Yeah.
You just made that situation a lot worse.
Yeah.
That scares me.
Yeah. I thank you. My billing department thanks you.
No, I don't bill for. That would be, I think, illegal.
Oh, okay. So with the discussions and all the stuff that has been going on the last 6 weeks called the election cycle, Is there been anything that has gotten your attention from would-be congressional victors or Senate victors that indicates anything about really addressing the taxing situation in America?
No, we're in a holding pattern. I think there's been indications that after the election, I think most people would agree there's some There's a few areas in the tax code that tend to get dealt with kind of every year or two, and then they get patched forward. Some of those patches were taken care of to Congress and the White House's credit at the end of 2012, but we still have some of these things that are not really resolved, and so and there's been discussion that they will get some level of attention after the election. I've yet to really figure out why it can't be done before the election, but obviously I'm not an astute political observer when it comes to, you know, the whys and fours. But you know, some of those things that are important, there's the ability, or there has been, to deduct the greater of the sales tax or the state income tax for taxpayers. And in a state where there's a high sales tax, that's particularly valuable. And so you think about that. And of course, in a state like Oregon, it's not so valuable. But when you start looking, you know, state of Washington, they've got a good sales tax, no state income tax. It would make a big difference potentially for Washington residents if that issue gets addressed. There's some items for business that are particularly significant that we're all waiting on, which is making year end tax planning pretty difficult.
Is there any rumblings that's going to be something addressed, let's say in the next couple of weeks before Thanksgiving, say?
I don't know about before Thanksgiving, but there are rumblings that it will get addressed in the 3 or 4 weeks after the election. To deal with some of these things, the big one is what we call Section 179. It's an expensing election that businesses have traditionally and continue to have, whereas a business can go out and buy some equipment and they can expense it in the year they purchase it instead of depreciating it over a number of years. So a typical piece of equipment might, under a default life, might have a 7-year life and might be depreciated over that 7-year period, even though you paid for it all in year one. Or you went out and borrowed the money and bought it in year one. In any regard, under traditional depreciation rules, you depreciate it over that 7-year life of the asset. There has been, for a number of years, this thing called Section 179, or an expensing election, which enables taxpayers to go out and write that equipment purchase off in the year that they incur the purchase.
So you'd have an option.
Yeah, and so what that does is it gives people ability to try to do some tax planning, which is attractive for some of us.
It's 3:19.
Attention 6th and 7th grade students. Plan now to attend the Ideas at Work Middle School Career Camp at College of the Redwoods this June. Campers take part in fun, hands-on projects in high-tech labs, tour businesses, and explore careers. There is no cost for this camp, but space is limited. Learn more and apply online at decadeofdifference.org or call 445-7563. Don't wait. Sign up today at decadeofdifference.org and be part of it.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley. Bill, some of the IRS stuff that we were talking about, if there's nothing that's actively going on there, what happens, what does the agency do during this kind of a time? Do they just kind of have their normal week in and week out stuff that they're going through?
That's a great question. Right now, the IRS is gearing up for the filing season. And so they're getting their systems ready to be able to handle the influx of tax returns that's going to come in beginning sometime in January, depending on when they open the e-filing system.
But still to be flexible enough to handle whatever might be coming down the system.
Yeah, and that's the problem. And if you talk to the IRS, their representatives are going to tell you this really makes it difficult for them to do their job, because when we're waiting for potential changes in the tax law and when they come so late, the IRS has to program for them, and they may leave space to program for. I don't have the terminology, but you know, they may be providing for it sort of so that they can plug it in. But you still have to plug it in, test it, and make sure it's all going to work. And so the IRS is saying, you know, for a good filing season, you know, they need to have some of these things nailed down earlier than what we tend to get. And last year things were really difficult for various reasons. This year, I think the filing season is going to be challenging because of the Affordable Care Act and implementing the reporting for that. because people are going to be filing a couple of pieces of paper with their tax return. Unless they're covered by Medicare, they're going to be filing paper in their tax return, providing information to the government about what their health care is and whether or not they should be paying a penalty because they don't have coverage, or whether they're qualified for the assistance that they're getting under the current program. So there's this whole element is new. Nobody's done it. Nobody knows what the paperwork looks like that they're to be looking for to make sure they set it aside for taxes. It's going to come in, and I'm sure it's going to be marked clearly that it's tax significant. But you know, other people have figured out, you know, how to kind of mirror that. So sometimes the value of that gets eroded over time because other people kind of figure out a way to make things look like they're really important when they're not, or make them look like they have the imprimatur of government when it doesn't really exist.
So during this time, it's just kind of more of a status quo. They're not doing anything extraordinary or exceptional.
No, but the IRS has been there are a few things that are going on. One of those things is that there continues to be a lot of abuse of confidence schemes that are being run, with people being contacted with by phone or by email or other things, implying that they're the IRS. The particularly nasty ones that are more prevalent right now are collection calls. They're calling and saying, "Hey, you need to pay us. And you need to pay us right away." And so they demand an immediate payment. That's a sign that you're probably dealing with somebody who's not legitimate. They demand.
The IRS doesn't ever do anything on the phone, do they?
They will make some phone calls when it's collection, but it's generally gone through a pretty good cycle.
You've received.
Yeah, your first contact is not a phone call. Your first contact is correspondence, and generally there's a cycle that goes associated with the correspondence before you ever get to where you would, you know, they're going to have sent you bills and gone through levy and all these other things before you're going to get somebody making a phone call for collection. So that, you know, a person receiving a phone call saying, "We're the IRS, you need to pay us right away, or we're going to contact the local police, and we want you to pay using a prepaid debit card." Okay, that should make everybody's antenna twitch that's not a legitimate type of an approach. So you were looking at the other thing that happens is there'll be threats that are made that hey, we're going to contact local law enforcement, all these types of things. So understand when, you know, if you get a phone call like that, you just need to hang up. And if they say, you know, "We're from the IRS," say, "No, you're not," and hang up. and just let it go. And you know, if
don't
the IRS,
play with them?
No. Well, I mean, if you want to play with them, go for it. But you know, it's like there's a bunch of these schemes out here. They'll call and say, "We're from Microsoft, and we'd like to, you know, we've been getting error messages from your computer." Well, everybody's computer has error messages, right? So it rings kind of true for people. Well, then you go through, and what they're trying to do is get into your system, and then they've got a backdoor in and out. So be very careful. Anybody who calls you unsolicited like this, just, you know, in general, you know, they're probably, unfortunately, not legitimate. And we've got too many people who are using their creative energy to try to find ways to rip people off instead of do something productive in society. So protect yourself. Be skeptical. What all these confidence schemes have as a commonality is they try to get you wrapped up on something that seems like it could be true, and then they just try to draw you in with it, and then they try to put fear in your, you know, that if you don't do this, then they're going to go after my bank account, or, you know, they're going to do this or that, or I'm going to have the police at my door, or whatever it might be. So be very discerning when it comes to particularly telephone calls of that nature.
Well, I would consider the IRS being a federal agency and law enforcement being a local agency, there's probably not a lot of direct contact between the two.
I think that's fair to say. The other thing that there are ways of reporting this. The IRS has – I don't have that number with me, but there is a phone number you can contact the IRS and say, okay, this is this scheme. I don't know what they do with it, but there also was an address you could forward phishing emails that would come out with kind of the look of the veneer of an IRS contact.
Now, that one I would think that you could have some exposure with.
Well, yeah, but it probably goes overseas anyway. It's so difficult to chase this stuff down, and yeah, and this might be a Russian gang. Generally, when you get an email, it's surprising how many times there are functional errors, grammar errors and things like that in the email.
It's 3:30.
Remember the music from your trip to Latin America? You are invited to listen to the newest member of our radio family, 1790 AM, a Spanish language music station with sports from ESPN and news from CNN Español. If you own a business, invite Juan listeners into your business. For information, call 442-5744 or go to juan790.com. 1790, tocando lo que le gusta.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley. Bill, the concept of some of the rule changes that are going on at the federal level, I know we kind of touched a little bit last time about it at the state level. Certainly there's a bunch of things that are going on at the state level, but what sense do you have? Is California going to wait for the feds to do anything and then react, or is California going to ignore? Is California doing its own thing again?
I think California is largely in a reactive mode as far as the feds go, as far as any changes to federal. And California doesn't conform to everything that the feds do, which makes California returns a little more difficult sometimes because you've got rules that, as an example, health savings accounts. California doesn't conform. So you've got you got to do it one way over here and another way over there. And there's a series of those things. But California right now, they're kind of focused on their own internal things. We've got a couple of ballot measures out that are at least, ostensibly pointed at budgetary kind of issues and structural issues. But, California just does some different stuff. I guess they were running short on Cal Grant funding, and so they created this new program this year for funding for these things, and it's called the California College Access Tax Credit Fund. California College Access Tax Credit Fund. Okay, and this new fund, if you make a contribution, and we're still waiting to see all the rules on how this happens. If you make a contribution to the fund this year, and let's take, I'm going to use $1,000 because it's a nice round number. You get a 60% tax credit from the state of California.
Okay.
60%. So $600 tax credit. Then you get to deduct the $1,000 as an itemized deduction for federal purposes as a charitable contribution.
So aren't you ahead of the game?
Yeah.
We're getting close.
Yeah. Pretty good deal. For somebody who's in a high bracket.
Do you have to have a kid?
For somebody who's in a high bracket, that's it's almost, it's almost a wash for making that contribution. Now, what you're also doing is you're functionally seeing the state of California say, we'll give up the tax revenue to have money go into this fund. So they're basically saying, hey, we're going to give you this ability to target 60% of this contribution and get a deduction for it, and we're going to get it where we want it so it can be used in a different manner. And then next year, the credit goes down to 55%, then it goes down to 50% the following year. And I don't know where beyond that. And right now, we're still waiting for regs on how this is going to be fully implemented. But I would expect to see that towards the end of the year, particularly for some high bracket taxpayers, maybe they go out and they take advantage of this thing. Because if you got somebody who's in a 39.6% federal bracket, plus you look at a few other issues, maybe a few other tax issues they may be facing, and if they can go out and make a $10,000 contribution and get a $6,000 California credit and deduct the entire $10,000 against their federal income, that might be a pretty sweet deal for them. So I expect to see – they made it a sweet enough deal. I think people are going to do it.
If they're made aware of it. Is that something that has to occur before the end of the calendar year?
Yeah, it does. If not, if it goes into next year, then the credit's 55% instead of 60%.
It starts stepping down.
Even then, it's still a relatively efficient tax payment, tax expenditure from a taxpayer perspective. So that's kind of an interesting one just because on the surface it makes no sense. But when you realize, okay, they're trying to reload the funds available for Cal Grants, then you see, okay, this is – and I don't know enough about the state budget to know how they were funding Cal Grants before and what that source was. But clearly it dried up.
Lottery?
Jeez. Yeah. Maybe they'll give us tax credits for buying lottery tickets.
Yeah. What about these measures and the tax bonds that are on the ballot, that routinely are on the ballot? How are they treated for tax purposes, whether it's a local one or a state one?
Well, it depends. I mean, if you look at, as an example, the Eureka City Schools has a $50 million, effectively, bond measure on our ballot. And those funds will be repaid over time from funds of the school district. So, so that comes out of their funds. Now, you'll look and see, as an example, some years we'll have on the ballot, a CalVet bond measure where that money goes to fund CalVet loans or whatever the case may be. And there may be a specialized funding source to repay that. And then you'll see other things that are general bond obligations of the state of California, maybe to buy land to protect the mountain lion. We had that a few years ago. You start to see some of these things. Well, that comes out of the budget. So then it's always important to look at the legislative analysts' analysis and look at the analyses of these things from the various perspectives so that you can understand, okay, this is what the legislation's intended to do. And then you'll look and you'll say that there'll be an analysis to figure out where it's going to come from and what the cost is going to be. And for years, that information wasn't even presented, really. I mean, that was kind of an enhancement to the materials that went out. You had to work a lot harder to find it, and there was always an argument about whether this guy's numbers were correct versus this person's. And so,
The accuracy or interpretations. Yeah. Yeah.
So now you've got at least theoretically an unbiased evaluation of what that cost is going to be. But those things, I mean, if you borrow money, you got to you got to have a source to repay the funds, and unless that vehicle comes along with a revenue source, which most of them don't, it's going to come out of somebody's budget somewhere along the line.
For an individual taxpayer, though, let's say I buy one of those bonds, mm-hmm. and let's use your round figures because they're simpler. Mm-hmm. $1 million.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, just chump change.
Yeah, you betcha. Never mind.
How
is that treated? I buy that. Is there variability based on what particular measure, what the bonds were, who it was for, what the payouts are, that kind of thing?
Yeah. What happens is the bonds, they all have a bond agreement that goes with them that kind of controls here's what happens. And then the bond holders buy the bonds subject to whatever the terms of that agreement are. And sometimes the interest rate is generally determined at the time of the issuance of the bond. So they'll go out and kind of evaluate where it is in the market and what they think. And they'll try to generally pick a rate that brings the bond, that they can sell it at face as opposed to having to either discount it or put a premium on it to have it sold. Now, once it sells, the value of the bond changes because, these bonds are fixed rate in nearly all cases. And so what happens is as interest rates go up, having a low interest rate bond is less attractive. Or vice versa. So the bond rates fluctuate, and the bond values fluctuate over time, which means when somebody, if you'd gone out and bought $10,000 worth of some initial bond offering, it may not be worth $10,000, 5 years into a 20-year term of the bond. So it's
not a guarantee.
No. Well, in 20 years, you're going to get repaid. So it's a question of, whether or not, in between, if you need to liquidate it, you may sell at a premium, you may sell at a discount when you go to do that.
Are these tax-free?
Yes. So what happens is that the taxpayer collects interest on the bond. So let's say it's $10,000 bond, they got a 5% interest rate. Well, it gets paid twice a year. So they're getting this. You get this monthly, or you get this semi-annual payment that comes in tax-free. So that generally is part of the attractiveness and the predictability. Right now, there's a number of bonds. I mean, most municipal bonds are issued at a rate higher than what the current equivalent market rate is. So generally, they're bought and sold at a premium because of that, and because there's additional value in that cash flow. Although, as the risk of rising rates gets closer or feels more immediate, then things tend to change. So you need to talk to somebody who is a knowledgeable advisor when you're thinking about these kinds of investments, because there are risks depending on which way the rates go and whether or not you're going to hold the maturity and whether you can assume you're going to do that. And you know, it tends to be that people who are well off, and generally those are people who are probably older than the average, that have these kinds of investments in their portfolio. And you have to realize, okay, is this realistic that I'm going to live long enough that, you know, towards them, you know, towards this thing's going to, is this going to mature before my end of life, or am I, you know?
So the question is, what's going to be retired first?
Yeah.
The bond or you?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. And of course, we never know the date, you know, that we're going to get a go, but
Now, that opens up a whole different discussion, but I don't think we were talking about medical. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:45. We'll be back with more from Bill McCauley.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Probably fill that.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Time, it's 3:49. Yes, the gauntlet's been thrown. Can we fill the final minute of the show? Is there anything that we need to act on today for tax purposes?
Really, no. I think we're in a little bit of a holding pattern. It's going to be really interesting to see post-election what comes out and whether or not there's going to be some tax law changes.
When would you expect, I mean, tonight comes down, everything settles. Tomorrow, okay, next week, you start hear rumblings?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, that'll be interesting to see if they can move that quick on something.
Well, yeah, and it just seems like the parties are so entrenched right now, you know, and don't, you know, are kind of practiced at not working together. So I don't know, you know.
Tis the season.
It is. It is indeed.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Brian.
We've been talking shop with Bill McCauley. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop and tonight for our election coverage starting at 8:00.